This message comes from NPR sponsor, Hulu. Based on shocking true events, the new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, tells the story of a savage murder in a small town. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays, only on Hulu.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
From MaximumFun.org and NPR, it's Bullseye. John David Washington made his acting debut in 1992 in Spike Lee's Malcolm X. John's father, Denzel, yes, that Denzel Washington, was the star of the movie. And when Spike needed a boy about 8 years old for a quick cutaway scene, well, it wasn't hard for John to get the part.
May 19th, we celebrate Malcolm X's birthday because he was a great, great Afro-American. And Malcolm X is you, all of you. And you are Malcolm X.
I'm Malcolm X!
But for the next couple decades, that was pretty much it for his acting career. Washington played football in high school. He was good at it. He played in college. He even entered the NFL draft and played pro for a few years in other leagues. Washington made acting his career in 2015. He starred as Ricky Jarrett in the HBO drama Ballers. Ricky was a football player, which was familiar territory for Washington, but he also was great in it.
This number represents the man I am on and off the field. My dad wore 81, so I took the number 18 to flip the script. I swore a long time ago I'd never take the field wearing a jersey that didn't say anything but you, Dad, on the front and back.
Washington has since taken on a bunch of other big parts. He was the lead in Christopher Nolan's Tenet. He was in the romantic drama Malcolm and Marie. He's also in the brand new mystery comedy Amsterdam, which just hit theaters. When I talked with John David Washington in 2019, he'd just been reunited with Spike Lee, the first director he ever worked with. He starred in Lee's Academy Award-winning Black Klansman. Washington played Ron Stallworth, the first black detective to join the ranks of the Colorado Springs Police Department. In the film, Stallworth infiltrates a local chapter of the KKK over the phone, with the help of a white police officer who stands in for him in person. It's harrowing, hilarious, and at times hard to believe, but it's based on a true story. Before we get into my interview with John, let's hear a little bit from Black Klansman. In this scene, Ron has a job interview for the gig at Colorado Springs PD. He's sitting across from two men who are in charge of hiring. One of the interviewers is a white police officer. The other is a black city employee, played by the great Isaiah Whitlock. A quick note, by the way, Whitlock is an accomplished actor who happens to have a signature catchphrase. He developed it on The Wire. It is one word, a word that you cannot say on the radio, and part of the signature is that he extends that word you can't say on the radio. Let's listen.
How do you get along with people generally?
Sir, they treat me right. I treat them right. Like I said before, I was raised up the right way. So
have you ever had any negative...
What would you do if another cop called you a... Or worse.
Would that happen, sir?
There's never been a black cop in this city. Now, if we make you an officer, you will, in effect, be the Jackie Robinson of the Colorado Springs Police Force. And if you know anything about Jackie Robinson, you know he had to take a lot of guff from his fellow teammates, the fans, other teams, and the press.
I know the Jackie Roosevelt Robinson story, sir.
Good. So knowing that, if somebody calls you a will you be able to turn the other cheek?
If I had to, sir, yes. Yes, I would.
John David Washington, welcome to Bullseye. It's nice to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Listening to that in audio form made me think that, like, there's two great reasons to aspire to be Spike Lee. One is one of the great filmmakers of his generation, great teacher, all those things. The other is, if you put Isaiah Whitlock in your movie, you can be like, hey, Isaiah, would you mind going?
Consistently, too. He never, I mean, he's always delivering that every time. It's even funnier when you bleep it out, but you know what he's saying and you know who's saying it, too. It just gives more context to it. That was funny.
But in all sincerity, welcome to the show. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
You were a professional football player for a pretty long time. I mean, professional football careers tend to be short.
Yeah.
Did you always aspire to be a professional athlete?
I did it out of necessity in a way. I wanted to be an actor because of seeing my father and seeing my mother play the piano. I wanted to be a performer. But I started playing football, though, because my dad started getting pretty popular in Hollywood. And we started moving to different places and, started getting treated a little differently. So, of course, I wanted to protect my feelings and I wanted to start making my own name. So I chose football. Now, I love the game. I always loved football. Randall Cunningham is the reason I played. Seeing a person that looked like me at that position, at the quarterback position, I had never seen before. You know what I mean? So I aspired to play in the NFL, but it was more of a rebellious sort of quest of independence than it was to actually live out my dream, which was acting.
I had Terry Crews on the show a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. Folks probably know as an actor. He was also a professional football player.
The Redskins, right? Was it Washington?
Yeah, he played for a few different teams. I mean, mm-hmm. he bounced around. He played in NFL Europe. His career was actually a lot like yours. Yeah. And one of the things that Terry Crews said to me was he kind of locked eyes with me. I mean, locked eyes with me. He was locked eyes with me the entire time. Terry Crews is very Terry Crews-y. It's a very powerful experience to talk to that man. Uh-huh. He kind of locked eyes with me and he said, you know, with the exception of a few quarterbacks, everyone in the NFL is broken.
Like physically or just the mental?
Emotionally.
Emotionally. Oh, okay. Yes. Yes.
His point being that it's such a painful, brutal way to make a living that it takes a lot to drive someone to the level of success that gets you to the NFL. And I wonder if that was reflected in your experience.
Yeah, I would concur with that. It's watching football now. I can't believe what these young men put their bodies through, what they endure physically. Thinking about the human will, you know, and to provide for their families, to change their circumstances, you got to credit them, all of them. And I'm no different. I endured several concussions, torn meniscus, torn Achilles, sports hernia, broken ribs, clavicle, all in the name of that independence. You know, I was willing to sacrifice it all to show more to myself, but I didn't know that at the time. For others, though, to show that I can earn my own keep. I am my own man. There's so many cases in the NFL that they're just trying to provide for their family, trying to do better for themselves, you know, and that sort of motivation. I mean, you see it on draft day. NFL draft weekend is such an interesting social study because you see these kids, these young men, I should say, of all nationalities, from all different kinds of backgrounds, have the same sort of reaction, especially draft picks 1 through 10, but really all of them. They get this dream of getting their name called, you know, and they're ready to run through a brick wall. You know, they're almost programmed in that way based off of the nature of the sport and what you think is promised for you at that rainbow, which is the NFL. You know what I mean? And once you get there, it totally changes. The whole perspective changes. And unfortunately, NFL really stands for not for long. And you get a sort of a crash course in how to be a professional, but it's not really instituted early on in these young men's life. And more often than not, they learn the hard way. I think there's a documentary that's called Broke. And, the average life expectancy is 3 years. After 3 years, they become, you know, bankrupt. So it is an interesting, NFL specifically, is such an interesting case studies for these young men in this country and how they have to sort of turn it off, you know, after they're done playing. And the learning curve, you know, is narrow.
We've got so much more still to get into with John David Washington. Stay with us. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR. This message comes from Apple Card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase. That's 3% on products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card, issued by Goldman Sachs Bank, USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval, terms apply.
This is my voice. It can tell you a lot about me. And I'm not changing it for anyone. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of NPR episodes centered on Black experiences. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is John David Washington. He stars in the movies Black Klansman, Tenet, and the new comedy Amsterdam. When you auditioned for Ballers, you were still in a boot from the injury that ended your football career. Was it just a, well, what's the worst that could happen situation when you took that meeting or whatever it's called, went out to that audition?
Took the meeting, yeah. I was in a boot and crutches on a strong dose of painkillers. Now, I had prepared for the audition. I had been working the scenes with my mom, actually. She's the one that dropped me off, too. So shout out to Pauletta. So I got up there with Sheila Jaffe, who I call my other mother in the industry. And I thought that, yeah, I mean, I've been turned down so many times in the NFL. I'm sort of impervious to this pain and rejection. So what's the worst that can happen? I guess I had nothing to lose, and I'm feeling pretty good on the medication. So why not? You know what I mean? But like, I knew how much I wanted. It wasn't why not. Like, sure, I'll try acting. It wasn't like that, because in fact, my agent, who Andrew Finkelstein, who told me about the audition, I was resistant at first because I wanted to come here to New York and study for a year at least, and then start going on auditions. And he told me that, you know, you're not going to get the job. You're not going to get a lot of jobs. You're going to get turned down a lot, but you need to get used to auditioning, getting in the room and getting comfortable, studied or not studied. And I was like, oh, that's a good point. And I'm used to getting rejected anyway. So, all right, I can do that. So the plan was go in there, go into this audition and sort of, you know, get torn up, tell me what to work on, and sort of apply those things when I got to New York and started studying. And the craziest thing started happening. They just kept inviting me back, and 10 auditions later, I got it.
Did you say 10?
10 auditions, yeah.
That's a lot of auditions, dude.
Yeah, well, because they were like, they had to be sure. I mean, you know, it's just guys basically coming off the street. Like, they couldn't believe. I mean, it was a huge, I had to fight. There was a lot of people trying to get that job, and they had to be sure. Sheila Jaffe, I got to shout her out. Peter Berg, HBO, they supported me first. There was still some resistance, but those, Peter Berg, Sheila Jaffe, and Papa Dave Levinson, they really backed me. They were in my corner. And Sheila Jaffe, actually, after the third audition, shot me a text telling me, you should retire from football. Like, you were meant to do this. You know, they couldn't believe that, you know, I've never done it before. So, I love her to death for that.
Let's hear a little bit from the first season of Ballers from a few years ago. So in this scene, Ricky arranged to meet with his ex-girlfriend, Annabella, played by Annabella Acosta. And Annabella, called Bella, left Ricky because she was fed up with his cheating. And they are standing in front of a public fountain, and Ricky is holding a bouquet of roses and lilies.
Bella, I'm sorry I lost my head, okay? I'm sorry for everything. I keep repeating my mistakes, but I'm trying to change. I'm trying to do things different.
Wow. Ricky, you can't be serious.
7 carats serious.
You like it?
Look at that. What you think?
You really believe you're ready for marriage? Because after all, I mean, you know, this is an engagement ring, right?
What?
Because I know you don't think I'm so stupid, so I would just accept the apology ring.
No, baby, because
no,
this is
to
what
me.
I...
There is no ring, no house, no car, not even the whole diamond can buy my forgiveness.
Baby, that's a $400,000 ring.
Kobe spent $4 million, you delusional.
He makes more than me. Baby, come back. Baby! Baby, come back! Baby, come back!
I got it.
Baby, we can get married if you want to.
Oh, my God. That dude. Ricky Jarrett, man. he's crazy.
What did you realize you... I mean, you had spent your whole life with a dad who was in movies from when you were little. He was, you know, he was a new actor. By the time you were an adult, he was a movie star. You know, you had been in, you're in Malcolm X. you'd done this to some, this had been a huge part of your life, your entire life.
Mm-hmm.
But when you showed up for set as basically a greenhorn,
mm-hmm.
what did you realize you did not know?
What did I realize? Everything, you know, how to even read a call sheet, you know, just what blocking meant. I had to act like I did, but I was like, what is this? What does call time mean? You know, I was ignorant to a lot of that stuff. And, you know, rehearsal, when we would rehearse, you know, I'm like going full tilt. Like, I'm not like reserving anything for the scene. And I was just ready to go at all time. Every take. Yes. I'm ready. I mean, I'm always ready, but I had a very much a football mentality and was wearing myself out, you know. I slept well that first day. And also when I cut the first day also was a club scene. So like there was like a whole bunch of extras and here comes The Rock and Pete Berg is like, you ready? Because I know that they, you know, they're still taking a chance on me. Because Sheila also says some people are great auditioners and they can't, you know, they don't step up to the plate when it's game time. Others aren't very good auditioners, are great when they get the job. So I knew I had a lot of pressure on me and I wanted to make them right because they fought for me because there were some people that didn't necessarily believe. So they did. So I had a lot on the line and I just went for it. I just went for it. But I'm definitely looking around like at Pete and at The Rock and at Omar and all these extras. And I'm like, man, this is crazy. What have I done? Time out, guys. I need another month, you know. But no, I went for it.
How did you get Black Klansman?
I got a text message from Spike Lee saying,
"We all have this story."
Yeah, I mean, right? No, you know, everybody gets texted from him, right? I mean, I got to say, "Yo, this Spike called me," in those exact words. "Yo, this Spike called me." You know, I'm thinking this is a prank. I definitely didn't think he had my number. So I didn't know what was going on, but I call him because I need, this would be great. I need the job. You know, I'm out here, you know, trying to get jobs. So I called him and he sort of soft pitched me the story about the first African-American detective in Colorado Springs that infiltrates the Ku Klux Klan. Now I'm thinking, you know, is it Carlos Bigsby, the Bigsby star skit by Dave Chappelle? I'm like, oh, is this some sort of play on that? But I'm in because Jordan Peele and Spike are in, so I'm in. But he says, no, there's a book, and he's going to send it to me. He sends me the book around Star Wars Black Klansman. I read it, and I call him back, and I'm blown away. I tell him how much I loved it. And he said, all right, I'll see you this summer. That's how I got it. Now, I had done a movie for his wife who produced this movie called Monster. That premiered in Sundance last year. So he was familiar with that and some stuff on Ballers. So, you know, he knew. But, I mean, he knew of my work. But, yeah, that was basically the audition process.
Let's hear another scene from Black Klansman. John David's character and his partner, Flip, who's played by Adam Driver, are at the police station. And they've just come back from... this is relatively early in the film, an undercover operation at a meeting, at a Klan meeting. And Flip, who is white and is the in-person Ron,
is upset because his cover was almost blown by one of the Klansmen who's very suspicious of him. And that guy basically just tried to get him to take a lie detector test at gunpoint and also drop his trousers to prove that he was not Jewish. And he only very narrowly escaped the situation.
I didn't want to say what trap, but that Peckerwood had a gun in my face. And he was an hair away from pulling the trigger.
And he didn't.
But he could have. And then I would have been dead. For what? Stopping some jerk-offs from playing dress-up?
Flip, it's intel.
Well, I'm not risking my life to prevent some rednecks from lighting a couple sticks on fire.
This is the job. What's your problem?
That's my problem. For you, it's a crusade. Mm-hmm. For me, it's a job. It's not personal, nor should it be.
Why haven't you bought into this?
Why should I?
Because you're Jewish, brother. The so-called chosen people. You've been passing for a WASP.
White Anglo-Saxon Protestant, cherry pie, hot dog, white boy. That's what some light-skinned black folks do. They pass for white.
Doesn't that hatred you've been hearing the Klan say, doesn't that piss you off?
Of course it does.
Then why are you acting like you ain't got skin in the game, brother?
Rookie, that's my business.
It's our business.
Your voice is so important in this film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, he had to convince the David Duke convinced and Klan's members convinced that he was a racist white man.
You're making choices both when he is on and off the phone. Like, I feel like this would be a different story if the premise was that he was doing, you know,
White voice.
Direct one-to-one code switching. If he was doing a white people voice on the phone and a black people voice off the phone in the ways that people think of them, it would be a less complex story for this character than the way that you chose to do it.
What was so compelling about the book, even just how he, you know, Ron Starworth talked about this, that he didn't change his voice at all. You know what I mean? And, I love that. As we understand code switching and all that, he saw it as he got into character as an undercover detective does. He talked about that, you know, being like acting and getting into character. He had to speak these words of hatred, the vernacular of racism and hate, but he didn't change his voice at all. So I couldn't have either. I shouldn't have either. I would have done a disservice to the man and to the film if I'd have done that. I just wanted to keep it as authentic as possible and to be able to also understand, as I did reading it and doing research, how complicated it is to be an African-American detective, police officer in this country, not blue enough for the department, not black enough for your own community, you know, and to be able to display that cinematically was a great opportunity for me to explore. It was something I was very curious about. And it meant a lot to me to be able to put on display how thankless of a job it is and how we as a community need to be, especially in the African-American community, need to be more specific with our contentions, with how we feel about law enforcement, you know, because there are some cases out there. I think Ron Starworth is an American hero. During his investigation, there were no cross burnings. There were no terrorist acts, violent acts in the community during that time. That's a big deal to me. That's a big deal because he wasn't trying to change the world. And it was also a big deal that he had gotten great support from white officers that helped him in this case. It wasn't just one man on a mission, movie-wise, that'd have been convenient, but it wasn't. And Spike held that true to be true in the film as well. So that was a big deal to me. That's heroic. That he is a man that did his job, and I'm just glad because of the it's such a unique case and story that I'm just so happy and proud to be a part of telling that story in a movie.
We'll wrap up with John David Washington after a quick break. When we return, we will talk about some of the criticisms Black Klansmen received for its portrayal of policing and how Washington felt about them. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu. Dive into the chilling new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, the riveting adaptation of the acclaimed true crime book. Based on shocking true events, Under the Bridge tells the haunting story of a murder that lays bare a small community's darkest secrets. Go deep into the hidden world of the town's tormented teenagers as detectives race to solve the sinister crime. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays, only on Hulu.
And now, a live reading from Rachel's Poetry Corner.
Elephants Theremin's Clifton, Neopets Porstrips Jepson, Pine Smell Jellybeans Goligoles, Skittles Squirrels and the Mole, Celery Chopsticks Pumpernickel, A Case of You by Joni Mitchell, Lullabies Tie-Dye The More You Know, all of these things on our wonderful show.
All these things and more wait for you on Wonderful every Wednesday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you download podcasts.
Welcome back to Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. If you're just joining us, my guest is actor John David Washington. He starred in the movies Tenet, Of Monsters and Men, and the brand new comedy Amsterdam, which is in theaters now. When he and I talked in 2019, he just starred in Black Klansman, Spike Lee's Academy Award winner. In it, he played a black police officer who infiltrated the KKK over the phone. Let's get back into our conversation.
Your character's girlfriend in the film is an activist who is opposed to the police in the United States pretty directly. And there were criticisms of the film, including from Boots Riley, who has been a guest on this show and is a guy I've known for a long time.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Bay Area, right?
Gotcha. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Total teenage hero of mine. Mm-hmm. And who are critical of the idea that in a story about race in America, a police officer should be a hero. How did you feel about that? Was that something that you thought about before that came up after the movie came out?
No, and shout out to Boots Riley. I saw his film, and it was crazy. We ain't never seen anything like that. You know, we ain't seen anything like it. And I think it's important that we're in a great time right now in film and cinema in this business, that we're getting opportunities to tell our stories in certain parts of the world. Certain communities are getting our stories out there, that they're putting money, they're funding these ideas and these great writers and directors out there. So it's all positive. But
forgive me, but I don't want to give the impression that it's like a binary between this movie and that movie, because I know how much Boots admires Spike Lee and his work, and how much about the film he also admired. Mm. And he worked very hard to make that clear when he was being critical.
Gotcha. Well, no, I kind of alluded to it earlier. I before the research, I did another film called Monsters and Men, and I got to do ride-alongs for about a month and a half, and be with a lot of police officers of color. I didn't realize what they went through, you know. So like Laura Harrier's character, I probably would have been more on that side until I got the full more clear perspective on what they do. There's a lot of, you know, men and women in the minority that are protecting and serving, that don't get thank you'd, that get nothing but criticism, get lumped into a lot of police officers that have abused their power, that are incompetent in how they, how they handle things. So that was very important for me. This is a man, Ron Starr was a man with great integrity. You know, he was unapologetically black. You know, he'll tell you that he was a man of his community. You know, I think he says it to the love interest, to Laura's character towards the end. Like, just because I don't wear a black beret, black gloves or leather jacket, that I'm not for the liberation of my people. He feels like there's a way to do it from the inside. There's a way to do it. And the law was on his side when confronting a David Duke, you know. And, you know, you could have made a movie about how he even came into being a police, how he got to become a detective, a police, Colorado Springs detective in the 70s. So to me, what I listed earlier about why he's a hero is because of he was successful in his mission. makes is what I would has how I would respond. You know, again, this is one case. This is a man that was successful in this case, and he did it. He did it the right way.
John David Washington, I'm so grateful you came on Bullseye. It was so great to get to talk to you, and thanks for your wonderful work in this movie and elsewhere.
I appreciate that so much. Thanks for having me. This was great.
John David Washington from 2019. His latest movie is Amsterdam. It's directed by David O. Russell and features dozens of other movie stars: Chris Rock, Margot Robbie, Robert De Niro, others. Black Klansman, in which Washington starred, is available to rent and buy digitally pretty much everywhere. That's the end of another episode of Bullseye. Bullseye is created from the homes of me and the staff of Maximum Fun in and around Greater Los Angeles, California. Here at my house, I finally retired the set of drinking glasses that I bought 10 or 15 years ago at a thrift store. I had broken one too many. Two of them got stuck together when I tried to separate them using heat and cold to expand and contract them. One of them exploded. The new ones are tempered glass. Our show is produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our senior producer is Kevin Ferguson. Our producers are Jesus Ambrosio and Richard Roby. Our production fellow at Max Fun is Tabitha Myers. We get booking help from Merritt Davis. Our interstitial music is by DJW, also known as Dan Wally. Our theme song is called Huddle Formation, recorded by The Go Team. Thanks to The Go Team. Thanks to their label, Memphis Industries. They let us use that. We appreciate it. Bullseye is on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube, at Bullseye on Twitter, facebook.com/Bullseye with Jesse Thorne, and search for Bullseye with Jesse Thorne on YouTube. You will find our interviews and stuff we're up to there. Great places to go if you want to share something that you liked on this week's show. I think that's about it. Just remember, all great radio hosts have a signature sign-off.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Oracle Cloud Infrastructure. OCI is the platform for database, application development, and AI needs. Do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic. Take a free test drive at oracle.com/NPR.
What does it mean to be Black in America? In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as varied, nuanced, and dynamic as the Black experience, you'll hear it means everything. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.